This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor. Jeff Mellor.
Good afternoon. Happy Saturday. Hope you're enjoying your weekend so far. I am Jeff Mellor, live from Wright Field as we get set for game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Kansas City Royals after the Sox took the opener of this series last night. Thrilling win in front of a packed house here at Wright Field. It was Mexican Heritage Night. It was also Kyle Teal's Major League debut, and it was a fantastic Friday night here at Wright Field, along with some fireworks as well. But we'll get to that. I do want to recap what has been an eventful week so far for the White Sox, and I would say a pretty good one as well, as they opened up a 7-game homestand starting on Monday against the Tigers earlier in the week. Listen, Tigers, best team in baseball. They play a good brand of baseball. Monday was not. In fact, I would say it was probably the low point of the week for the White Sox, as the score dictated. White Sox lost that one 13-1, and I would say Kerry Carpenter continues to be a menace to the Southsiders.
Swinging a high, deep drive, right center. Robert at the fence, a leap, and another home run for Carpenter. He's got 3 tonight.
He had 3 on Monday night, and that gave him 13 on the season. Concluded a 3-for-5 performance, 5 RBIs on the day. And again, 3 home runs on Monday night, and that gave him 6 this year against the Chicago White Sox. That is obviously a problem. I mentioned it on the postgame show that evening. It reminds me of the year that Gleyber Torres, and probably didn't hurt the fact that Gleyber Torres played second base for the Tigers for the series against the Sox here this previous 4-game set. But that season back in 2019, when Gleyber Torres had a career-high 38 home runs, in which he hit 13 against the Baltimore Yankees, I'm sorry, the Baltimore Orioles, as a member of the New York Yankees, it just feels like Kerry Carpenter has the White Sox number this year. The good news is, though, that did not continue throughout the remainder of the series. The White Sox finally got right a little bit against the Tigers starting on Tuesday night, and it was a somewhat surprising revelation. Maybe it shouldn't have been, but Will Venable, prior to Tuesday night's game, recognizing that Luis Robert was in a clear funk, talked about how he was going to get a couple of days off so that he could work on his swing in the cage with the White Sox coaches and kind of just put the results of a game behind him. Just go work on your swing, get right. So that opened up the opportunity for Michael A. Taylor in center field on Tuesday, and he certainly took advantage of it.
The pitch. Taylor hits a high fly ball out into deep left center. Green's back at the wall. It's gone. 3-run homer, Michael A. Taylor. Taylor with his 3rd homer of the year. He's got all 4 RBIs tonight.
White Sox would go on to tack 4 more runs onto their ledger there and win that one 8-1, grabbing the 2nd of 4 against the Tigers so far in this series at that point. And it was a nice bounce back win for the Sox, considering they were blown out on Monday night. Now, we move forward to, and you know what I should mention too, it was good to see Michael A. Taylor really thrive with that opportunity, because the White Sox bats up until that point throughout the game had been lacking somewhat. So for Michael A. Taylor to have that big home run and drive in 4 on the night, also picked up his 7th stolen base of the year. He has been, I think, exactly what the White Sox kind of hoped for. The stats may not reflect, you know, Michael A. Taylor being a, he's not going to be an all-star caliber player. He is who he is at this point in his career, 10 seasons in. But he is a gold glove caliber center fielder. He can also, certainly when you move him to left or right, give you plus-plus defense there. And from time to time, he can put a charge into one and provide you some power. So he's been a nice fill-in from time to time when the White Sox have asked him to step in. I think he's done a really nice job with his opportunity. You wonder if some teams that are in contention might be calling up Chris Getz and just checking the tires on what it might cost to acquire a Michael A. Taylor, a veteran here who would give, obviously, a playoff team a really nice defensive replacement caliber player. So something worth thinking about. Michael A. Taylor has, I think, delivered the value that the White Sox were hoping they could get, and a really nice veteran presence inside the clubhouse as well. So that was Tuesday night, 8-1 victory. We move to Wednesday. Wednesday, hindered by rain, certainly a 95-minute rain delay is not what anybody wants, but the good news was that the White Sox were able to get the game in against the Tigers. Jared Schuster was the opener for that one, slated to, well, I believe the plan was to try and allow Schuster the opportunity to go through the Tigers lineup once, and then they were going to lean on Mike Vassell. So it wasn't necessarily a traditional opener role in the sense that one inning and then you go to the bulk man. That's not exactly what I believe the White Sox were trying to line up to do. I think they were hoping that Schuster could go through the entire Tigers lineup once. And, well, I say that. He actually did do that. Unfortunately, the problem was that he went through nine Tigers batters in the first inning as the Tigers jumped on the White Sox, scored four in the first. And the White Sox, though, to their credit, fought their way back into that one. And, it, you know, I don't know if it was a 95-minute rain delay that messed with Schuster a little bit, or just the fact that the Tigers are a good baseball team. Could have been a little bit of each. Nevertheless, though, I do think you have to give Mike Vassell credit. He has been a really nice find for Chris Getz and his team. They traded for him days before the start of the opening season, the Rule 5 pick, and he has been, I think, I don't even know if there were any expectations of Mike Vassell when the White Sox made the trade from any casual or even insiders. You know, you make a trade like that for a Rule 5 guy and you don't know exactly what you're going to get. You're hoping you see some potential, you see some talent, but I don't think anybody could have expected Mike Vassell to be the most effective reliever. And I say reliever loosely because he's been in that bulk role where he's given the White Sox 2-3 plus innings time and time again, answered the bell whenever they've called upon him. He's 3-2 on the season, 1.89 ERA in 38 innings. He struck out 27. He's got a 1.21 whip. And I should mention, with Jonathan Cannon hitting the injured list, that's part of the reason why the White Sox have been using some of these bullpen days over the, you know, on Wednesday. And then they have one slated for Sunday. They're going to push Shane Smith back to Tuesday with the off day on Monday just to kind of manage Shane Smith's workload as well. So Mike Vassell has proven every time he's gotten the opportunity that he's up to the challenge, and he may be carving out a bigger role as we move forward. That's something that Will Venables talked about. They're open to that possibility. I think he's, I can actually pull it up here. I know he's gone 60 plus pitches a couple of times so far this year. And when you do that, you certainly are a possibility for a starting option. When you do that, when you show you're capable of going, you know, he had 58 pitches the other night against the Tigers in 3 2/3 innings of scoreless baseball. So I'm intrigued to see what Mike Vassell might do if they continue to stretch him out and give him a chance while Jonathan Cannon is on the injured list. Maybe he can be a starter in this league. He certainly talked about, I've had him on White Sox Weekly twice now this season, and he's a fascinating guy. Love his energy and his positive attitude. He talked last week about having six pitches, and the hard part sometimes coming out of the pen for him is just narrowing down what pitches he wants to utilize for that day, because he doesn't want to go out there and, you know, in a 2 or 3 inning stint necessarily be all over the place throwing 5 or 6 different pitches as he's trying to feel his way through it. But the fact that he has six pitches in his arsenal makes him an interesting possibility as a starter down the road here. And, you know, you can't rely on five starters anymore. You're just not going to get by. You look at all the good teams around baseball, and most teams are going to need 8-10 starters minimum to get through a season. And so, you know, the idea that Mike Vassell might be somebody who the White Sox can turn to in the not-too-distant future, I really like that and the opportunity for him. I hope he continues to thrive because he really has been a nice find so far for the White Sox this year. And I think that was, for me, in a 5-4 loss, not just the fact that the White Sox came back from a 4-0 deficit to tie it up, but to watch Mike Vassell yet again give the White Sox a great relief performance, really encouraging sign. So it would have been really easy, being down 4-0 after a long rain delay, to fold up shop. The White Sox did not do that, and you've seen that night in and night out, I think, from them, is that they are going to grind, and I think most White Sox fans can't appreciate that from this 2025 team. Maybe something they didn't always feel like they were seeing last season when they were watching White Sox games. And I think, too, when you have a performance like they did Wednesday night, it makes it easier to bounce back on Thursday afternoon, which it was a really nice game for the White Sox. Chase Meidroth, he continues to be, I don't know if he's the brightest spark for the White Sox so far this year, but he, at one point in the last two games against the Tigers, had reached base in 10 of his 11 at-bats. I mean, that's just absurd. And when you're reaching base over and over again, at some point, you're also going to drive in a run from time to time. And Meidroth did just that.
The 1-2. There's a base hit in the right. Meidroth will knock in Taylor. It's 2-0.
And so I mentioned, you know, when you come back on Wednesday night the way the White Sox did to put themselves in that game, I think it also gives you a little bit of confidence when you let a 2-0 lead like they had on Thursday afternoon, when you let that one get away but you are still in it. I think it gives you a little bit of confidence as a team, too, that you can fight your way through that. And it's not all hope is lost when the Tigers tie that game up in the 7th, 2-2. You realize, you know what, that's okay. And in the top of the 10th inning, this one went to extras. And when the White Sox are able to keep the Tigers at bay, they can't push across that runner on second base. And that gave the opportunity for the White Sox to finish it off in the 10th. And Tim Elko did not miss.
The 0-1. A swing and a ground ball, base hit. White Sox win. Tim Elko will be mobbed by his teammates as he rounds first base. He cracked that one out in the left center, and they beat the Tigers.
And there you go. Another nice storyline for the White Sox as well. Tim Elko getting the call back up this week and then provides a walk-off single. He certainly still needs to, I think, make a little bit more contact. That's something Elko's working on. He's still been striking out at a high rate. He struck out 3 times in that game, but was able to put it behind him and come up big when the White Sox needed it. Drove home the game-winning run there in the 10th, and the White Sox won that one 3-2. Steven Wilson picked up the win on Thursday, but Sean Burke was, I think, the story of that game as well. He pitched a career-high 7 innings, only gave up 2 earned runs, and they both came in the 7th inning. And honestly, the tying hit was one where it was just a perfectly placed ball right into the between Meidroth, Elko, and Talkman, all converging in right field, and it just fell in perfectly, unfortunately, and was able to bring home the tying run for the Tigers. But Sean Burke almost got through that inning, and that's just tough luck sometimes. But the 7 full innings that he was able to give the Sox, I thought, was yet again another move in the right direction for him as the White Sox continue to try and build this young staff up. A lot of good things, including, as we move forward to last night, and we can start with Davis Martin. And I will talk about Kyle Teal because a lot of it centered around him, but I should give Davis Martin his love. He gave the White Sox another quality start, and I don't feel like I gave him enough credit last night because we were so locked into the Kyle Teal conversation that was happening. But Davis Martin, 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 7 strikeouts last night for the Sox against the Royals. And this one was a tight game. Even though the score line didn't necessarily reflect it in the end, it was tight. It wasn't broken open until the 8th inning. So Davis Martin had to bear down, and he did a really nice job yet again. Lowered his ERA to 3.62 on the season, and he continues to be, listen, he keeps pitching like this, and that's why you start to see trade rumors surrounding a guy like Davis Martin. Now, I don't think Chris Getz really has any intention of trading Davis Martin because he's going to be under the – or he has plenty of years of control left for the White Sox, so I think that's a good thing. And I don't think you're looking to move a player like Davis Martin. But when he's pitching as well as he is, and the White Sox, their record – again, I'll tell you, the baseball they're playing this year is not even close to what they were doing last year. The record may be not exactly what you're wanting at 21-43, but I'm telling you, the run prevention is something that has greatly improved, and that starts with the starting pitching. And so that's why you see the White Sox people would just glance at their record and say, oh, hey, Davis Martin, he looks like he's doing well. I don't think Chris Getz is really interested in moving Davis Martin. If teams come a calling, it's because he's performing well, and that's a good thing for the White Sox. But it's nice to see that you have somebody like Davis Martin in your rotation who you think you can build around for the long term. And I think that's kind of my takeaway in what has been a very good week for the White Sox, is that there's a lot of good young pieces here that are showing themselves on a day in and day out basis. And I'm really encouraged, more so than I thought I would be, especially when you look at what the record is. But if you're watching every single pitch, I'm telling you, it is not the same as it was last year. There's been marked improvement made. And it doesn't just start with Davis Martin, but of course, the arrival of some of your top hitting prospects. And that really was what yesterday was all about here at Raid Field. And that is Kyle Teal making his Major League Baseball debut behind the plate, working with Davis Martin effectively, sporting number 8 for the White Sox now. And quick observation, Kyle Teal doesn't necessarily look like your traditional catcher. He does have, in terms of like, he's not really bulky. He looks athletic. Now, looks like he could be a little bit on the smaller side in comparison to some other catchers, but it was just one of those things where I'll be watching to see how he performs as I get to see him close now on a night in and night out basis. But he does have, he's certainly athletic about it. And so we'll talk about this as the, as White Sox weekly progresses here today, but the conversations surrounding him playing some other positions, I think, are certainly only going to intensify if he continues to hit, if Edgar Carroll continues to hit at the major league level. You're going to want both their bats in the lineup. So that's something we'll talk about as White Sox Weekly progresses. But as we continue to get you caught up on what happened this week, Kyle Teal did make his debut yesterday. And after walking in his first at bat, he came through with his first base hit in the major leagues.
1-1 coming. Swing and a base hit. Left field, Benintendi to third. He's going to be held. Kyle Teal with his first career hit, and Salvador Perez all over it. He got time from the home plate umpire and immediately flipped the ball to Luis Robert Jr. Congrats to Kyle Teal. And the fans are letting him know how they appreciate it.
Yeah, a moment Kyle Teal will never forget.
No doubt about that, DJ. And what I love, too, I told Kyle Teal in the pregame media scrum when he was, after he had just taken BP getting set for the game, and I told him, hey, man, you've had impeccable timing here, because he arrived on Mexican Heritage Night, which was a sold-out crowd. It was raucous, but in the best way possible. There was energy throughout. And so for him to make his debut last night was absolutely perfect timing to have a huge filled crowd here for him. It was pretty cool to see. So great timing by Kyle Teal. And that one is certainly one that he never will forget. More on Teal here shortly. But I do also want to play Luis Robert, who was back in the lineup finally. He was supposed to be back in the lineup on Thursday. Initially, Will Venable said he would miss a couple of days, but he actually fouled a ball off of his head when he was working on Wednesday. And so just to be cautious, they wanted to make sure that he was feeling okay. No concussion symptoms, so he was good. But they wanted to give him that one extra day on Thursday. So he got back into the lineup last night and a couple of soft hits. But sometimes it's not about how hard you hit him. Sometimes it's just seeing him fall that can actually help get you back into the groove. And let's hope that's exactly what happened last night for Luis Robert Jr.
The pitch to Robert. There's a base hit, a flare into right. Taylor scores. Here comes Slater. The throw's going to go towards second. It's a two-run single, and it's 4-2.
One more highlight from last night I do want to play because I do think it shows what type of player the White Sox have in Kyle Teal. This was in the bottom of the eighth after the White Sox had picked up the lead. It was a good inning because the White Sox scored five to blow it open there against the Royals. And Kyle Teal, with just showing the heads-up ability that a lot of people have commended him for in the bottom of the eighth with Kyle Teal on third base, this happened.
The 1-2 is low, and the dirt kicks away. Teal's going to score. Kyle Teal all fired up. It's 5-2. The other runners advanced as well on a wild pitch.
And I think we all made the observation at that moment. He's just a ball of energy, and that can be infectious. You now have Kyle Teal and Chase Meidroth who have those type of attitudes. They do the little things, and that you can't deny. You see that, and when you make plays like that and you see that energy, it just kind of exudes its way through the clubhouse. So hoping that now that you've got a couple players, Edgar Caro as well, all of a sudden it's a little bit more exciting to come to Wright Field and watch the White Sox play. So Kyle Teal with a fantastic debut. We'll go a little deeper, too, on Kyle Teal's debut. I do want to share with you a couple of things from Kyle Teal, including him getting the news of his big call-up and a little exchange that he had at spring training with our very own executive producer of White Sox Baseball, Brennan Riley. We'll do that when we come back right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Jeff Meller back at Wright Field here on White Sox Weekly as we are getting set for game number 2 of 3 here at Wright Field between the Sox and Royals after a White Sox winner in the opener. Let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves. Hey, Sox fans, head to the ballpark tomorrow, June 8th, as we celebrate your favorite Fuzzy Green Dude's 21st birthday. Join Southpaw and his friends for a special pregame patio party celebration when you purchase a specially priced ticket. Limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. All right, so a little more on Teal. I love these moments we've had. This is the fourth one now of the season that we've had from the White Sox where the player gets the news that the lifelong dream they've been pursuing is going to come true. Sergio Santos, the manager of the Charlotte Knights, is becoming a rising star of these videos that the White Sox social media team puts out. And this was the Knights manager informing Kyle Teal. Oh, I should say, too, Kyle Teal, when Chase Meidroth got the news that he was going to up to the White Sox, and he was going to make his big league debut, he didn't have a college shirt with him. And Kyle Teal had a college shirt that he gladly gave to Chase Meidroth so that he could arrive and actually not have to worry about going out and buying one when he got to Chicago. It can be a whirlwind experience as a player when you're getting back and all of a sudden, you know, you're doing this for the first time. You're hopping on a flight, usually in the middle of the afternoon, not arriving in the new city till, you know, 11 o'clock at night. Then you have to turn around and get to the ballpark. And chances are, if you're a player, you want to get to the ballpark early on your first major league game. So it can be a whirlwind experience. So Kyle Teal just basically gave his collared shirt to Chase Meidroth and said, hey, man, take mine, wear that. That's yours. And you'll be set. And then you don't have to worry about it. Good teammate, right? So Sergio Santos informed Kyle Teal on Thursday afternoon that he was getting the call.
Mr. Teal.
How you doing?
Have a seat there, big guy. No, I just wanted to talk to you really quick. So, like, obviously, I think you've done a fantastic job. Obviously, when the start of the season, you got off to a super, super hot start. Kind of cooled off a little bit, and then now you're back rolling again. Biggest thing I noticed is, like, your energy was always the same. Work ethic, everything is awesome. And those are important traits to have, dude. You're a good player. And then I actually heard a story when Chase got called up in Jacksonville, which I think epitomizes the young man you are, where he didn't have a collared shirt, and you're like, bro, take mine. Like, it's all good, right? That's super cool, and to me, that defines who you are, right? Yeah. So I'm a big believer in karma. I know you've heard me talk about it. So the White Sox want to give you this colored shirt to take up to Chicago. All right, bud?
Yeah.
Yeah? Huh? Congratulations, man.
Thank you.
Super proud of you.
We got fish. Thank you.
Good luck, man.
I appreciate it. Let's go.
Are you excited?
Dude, I'm so pumped.
I'm happy for you.
Always a really cool moment. That certainly was on Thursday, and he was taking it in yesterday afternoon, just going through it. It's, again, a whirlwind, a lot of stuff coming at you. And for him, a catcher, too, extra meetings that he's dealing with. So, but I said earlier on White Sox Weekly here that it was impeccable timing by Kyle Teal that he was arriving on Mexican Heritage night because it was in front of a packed house here at right field. So he was going to get an experience unlike any other in that he was going to get to make his major league debut in front of a sold out crowd. And coincidentally enough, we have an interesting tidbit here because Brendan Riley, who's the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, joins me at Reid Field each and every game and is with me back at the studios when we're at the State Street Studios for road games. Brendan went out to spring training in February and did some work with some of the White Sox players. And I'll hand it off to you, Brendan, to explain exactly what was going on and the audio that we're going to share with our listening audience.
Yeah, so if you ever listen to our games and you hear the players coming back from break introduce themselves and say, you're listening to White Sox Baseball, you know, this is who I am. We record those in Arizona before the season. And this season, when I went out there, I had typed up some Spanish liners for some of the Spanish players. We didn't end up getting to use any of them.
Specifically for some Spanish affiliates.
Yeah. You know, trying to have that as an option. And I made the mistake when I printed it. Mm-hmm. I tried to print all the English liners on one side of the page and the Spanish liners on the other side of the page.
Okay.
I didn't realize until I got down to Arizona, in fact, until I got I got there to record, that there was one Spanish line on the English side.
Okay.
And so when I was explaining to the players that, you know, you don't – the English-speaking players, obviously I'm not expecting to read the Spanish liners. I told them, hey, you know, you don't have to read that line. If you feel like it, you can. And, of course, all of them just kind of laughed. None of them really took it seriously. But Kyle Teal goes, excitedly, no, I'll do it. I'll do it. And so he did read those Spanish liners. And we have that sound back at the station. But it was a fun, energetic exchange from Kyle Teal. And I think it very quickly showed me the kind of, you know, high-energy guy he was.
I mean, if you want to do this,
I'll do the Spanish.
Stop you.
I'll do the Spanish.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to like build my Spanish speaking. I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
You got teammates.
Yeah,
speaking Spanish.
Yeah.
I get it.
Hola, soy Kyle Teal. Estás escuchando ESPN Chicago, la casa de los Chicago White Sox.
And Jeff, I feel like I should also mention this whole thing starts at like 6 a.m. So,
sure.
I mean, I didn't have the energy level that Kyle Teal had as he read those. But it was just really fun, and it was. I mean, you saw it yesterday. You saw the kind of energy he has on the field, and he has that energy, you know, recording Spanish liners for us.
Yeah, no, it is. It's an infectious personality, and really happy that he was able to have such a spectacular debut in front of a great crowd here at Reid Field last night. To your point, though, about just being one of those, like, good teammates that everybody's going to love. We've heard a lot about that. Everyone seems to love Chase Mydroth. Everyone seems to love Tim Melko. Everybody loves Edgar Caro, and everybody loves Kyle Teal. I mean, that is a good thing for a young team to have the core players that are arriving now at Reid Field not only be successful at the dish, but be good, likable guys that are setting the tone in the clubhouse. That can go a long way. And, you know, there's a lot of those through lines for teams like the 2005 World Series winning White Sox. You need that type of mentality inside your clubhouse if you're going to a lot of times achieve the greatest of successes that you're shooting for. And so, you know, I'm not promising, but it's good to see that type of attitude from a player like Kyle Teal. The enthusiasm. I talked about this when Edgar Caro arrived, how he was putting a lot of work into learning English, his second language, and you love to hear that it's also being reciprocated by someone like Kyle Teal working on his Spanish because he knows that it would be good for him if he's going to be talking with pitchers who also, if Spanish is their first language, hey, wouldn't be a bad idea to be able to communicate with them effectively. So you love to hear it. A great night here at Wright Field last night. A 7-2 win for the White Sox over the Royals. And hopefully they can continue and maybe put the series in their pocket and look for a sweep on Sunday afternoon. That would be a great way to do it here on Saturday at Wright Field. Join us at the ballpark for Family Sunday, speaking of Sundays, presented by Coca-Cola. The first 125 kids to enter at Gate 5 will head to a special area to receive autographs from some of their favorite players. Plus, enjoy family-friendly activities, kids run the bases, and more. Tickets start at just $10. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. Now, when we come back, there was a big announcement that happened on Thursday prior to the White Sox game. If you're a White Sox fan, you're probably well aware of it already. It has certainly dominated a lot of the conversation around the White Sox, but we will share it with you just in case you missed it. We'll do that when we come back. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Jeff Meller back here at Wright Field as we get set for game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Royals. Sox currently in the midst of a 7-game homestand. Sox fans, join us at the ballpark tomorrow, June 8th, as the White Sox and the Royals go at it at 110. First 7,500 fans in attendance will receive Southside legend Ray Durham bobblehead presented by United, Chicago's hometown airline. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Ray Ray bobblehead tomorrow here at Wright Field. I mentioned big news regarding the White Sox. They made the announcement on Thursday prior to their game against the Tigers, that series finale there, that there is a long-term ownership investment agreement. Now, this is something that had been reported on, but officially an announcement came from the White Sox on Thursday. It goes as follows. The Chicago White Sox announced that Jerry Reinsdorf and Justin Ishbia have reached a long-term investment agreement that establishes a framework for Ishbia to obtain a future controlling interest in the White Sox. As part of the agreement, Ishbia will make capital infusions into the White Sox as a limited partner in 2025 and 2026 that will be used to pay down existing debt and support ongoing team operations. The agreement provides that from 2029 through 2033, Reinsdorf will have the option to sell the controlling interest to Ishbia. After the 2034 season, Ishbia will have the option to acquire the controlling interest. In the event of any such future transaction, all limited partners of the Sox would have the opportunity to sell to Ishbia at that time. In addition to Justin Ishbia, his brother Matt Ishbia and father Jeff Ishbia will also be significant investors. There is no assurance that any such future transaction will occur, and in no event will such a transaction take place before 2029. Until such time, the Reinsdorf family will continue to own the controlling interest in the White Sox. Reinsdorf, chairman of the White Sox since purchasing the franchise in 1981, remains the sole day-to-day decision maker for the club. Quote, having the incredible opportunity to own the Chicago White Sox and be part of Major League Baseball for nearly 50 years has been a life-changing experience, said Reinsdorf. I have always expressed my intent to operate the White Sox as long as I am able and remain committed to returning this franchise to the level of on-field success we all expect and desire. End quote. So, there you go. The succession plan, the future succession plan for Justin Ishbia to eventually become the owner of the White Sox has been addressed publicly. And I think the key sentence is the fact that Ishbia will be making capital infusions for the White Sox as a limited partner from 2025 through 2026. To help pay down some existing debt and support ongoing team operations. Now, how much of this is tied to the fact that there was a major announcement regarding future stadium site, the 78, Block 78, something that the White Sox have been certainly interested in, that has been thoroughly reported on? The Chicago Fire owner, Joe Mansueta, has talked about how he wants to build a stadium for the Fire, a soccer-only stadium, on the 78. And it certainly seems like, at least if you read the reporting that has been done, there is the possibility of both a soccer stadium and baseball stadium. There's room enough for both the Fire and Chicago White Sox to potentially build new stadiums in that area. And I think the announcement of Ishbia eventually taking over the White Sox, assuming he wants to do that, and it's certainly an assumption, as this statement says, that doesn't this statement does not guarantee that will take place. I would. It certainly seems more than likely that it will. Justin Ishbia has a lot invested in the White Sox. He's building a home in Chicago, investing a lot of money there. It certainly seems like his long-term plan is to be the owner of the White Sox once Jerry Reinsdorf wants to go ahead and move forward with that transaction. And so he's investing money in what he expects to be his, you know, future franchise. And until that time, it's, I think, a good move, a great move for the White Sox, because you have somebody who wants to continue to build and wants to see their asset appreciate. And that is certainly good news for White Sox fans. And what happens with the Block 78 project, it's hard to tell right now. There's a lot that goes into that, but it is certainly an interesting time. And I think this is a positive, this is positive news for White Sox fans regarding the future of their team. I still will tell you, I love coming to Wright Field. I think it's a great place to see a baseball game. And the White Sox have a lease here through 2029. So there's, you know, that's still five seasons down the road here as we complete after, you know, four seasons after this one. So there's still a lot to figure out with that. But Justin Ishbia is certainly going to play a role. But Jerry Reinsdorf has the controlling interest. I will also add, I've seen some people draw a line from the Phoenix Suns struggling. Matt Ishbia, who was also mentioned in the statement as somebody who will be a significant investor with his brother Justin. And Justin, you know, while Matt has he takes the forefront for the Suns, Justin is also a partner in that endeavor. I've seen a lot of people be critical of the Suns because they haven't had the success that a lot of people were hoping, or at least Suns fans were hoping they would have. When Matt Ishbia took over, he immediately went out and made a huge splash trading for White Sox fan Kevin Durant. And, you know, there was a lot made of how the Suns have not been successful since the addition of Durant. I'll also add, they made another huge splash trading a lot of draft picks for Bradley Beal. Now, the difference between baseball and basketball, I do believe, is immense. If you look at the way the salary cap, there is a salary cap in basketball, and it is a very prohibitive one. There are, you know, there's certainly the luxury tax that you can pay in both sports. But in basketball, the problem is once you hit the cap, you have very little flexibility with the new CBA that's in place. And I don't think baseball fans who are listening to White Sox Weekly want me to get into the minutia of that. But what I will say is that when you make a trade for a player like Bradley Beal, like Matt Ishbia did, he was hoping that he could immediately turn the Suns into a championship-caliber team. The problem, I think, there is that you can put yourself in a spot where you have very little roster flexibility. At least the way the current CBA is structured in baseball, there's not really a whole lot of downside to seeing people invest money in your team. I'll use the Dodgers as Exhibit A. I will use their World Series opponent in last year's World Series, the Yankees, is Exhibit B. And then I will also toss in Steve Cohen's reign as the Mets owner and how that has turned things around quite dramatically over the last 2 years, as he's putting a lot of money into that asset. So I just think if anybody says, oh, Matt Ishbia and the Suns, they're struggling, what's going on there? I don't look at that necessarily as a bad thing for the White Sox going forward. So that is my two cents on anybody who is critical of the idea that Justin Ishbia and the Ishbia family owning the White Sox could be in any way a bad thing. I reject that notion out of hand. I don't think that is the case. 312-332-3776. Always welcome your phone calls as well here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, White Sox general manager Chris Getz actually was asked about Justin Ishbia, so we'll let you hear some of that sound, along with plenty of other things related to the White Sox. It was a good conversation with Chris Getz that he had with the media yesterday, so we'll share some of that with you when we come back right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino. Meller back here at Wright Field on White Sox Weekly every Saturday, 2 hours prior to our pregame coverage. We go in depth talking White Sox baseball with you, 312-332-3776. If you want to join the conversation, always open for you. Hey, Sox fans, grab your friends and head to the ballpark for Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. Get one ticket and two beers starting at $19. You must be 21 and over with a valid ID to purchase tickets. Visit whitesox.com/brews. As I mentioned, Chris Getz met with the media yesterday. Lots of interesting things covered. Of course, Kyle Teal was a big topic of conversation yesterday, along with the conversation about what we just talked about, Justin Ishbia taking over. That was also something that was addressed. Here was Chris Getz talking with the media yesterday prior to the game.
Well, you know, a lot of it was just Kyle's production, quite honestly. You know, we were, you know, you're always trying to fine tune every aspect of your game. And you look at what he was doing behind the plate from a receiving standpoint, you know, the feedback from our coaches and players that the game calling, the game management was in a really good spot. And then you look at his offensive output, which has been really strong now for a stretch. He just continues to put together quality at bats with power, getting on base, making good decisions. So you're looking at a fairly well-rounded player. Obviously, as he transitions to the major league level, there's always going to be adjustment. We feel like he's in a good spot. You know, Edgar's gotten you know, a fair amount of playing time. He's done a solid job for us. You look at yesterday was another example of him catching a quality game. His game management has been excellent. You know, he got some hits yesterday. I know the last couple weeks, you know, weren't as good as the weeks prior, but we certainly believe in him. But really, you know, you're talking about a tandem that's a young tandem that's probably one of the strongest in baseball. So, you know, it's not easy to send down a player like Corey Lee because he's talented as well. I mean, right. You look at the catch and throw and the athleticism that he has. But from the beginning in regards to, you know, building an organization that's strong up the middle, you know, the catching position is one that we've done a very good job on, and we want to continue to nurture that. And if there's going to be adjustments along the way and you know, rotating guys, so be it. You know, we feel like it's a strength of the organization. And you know, once again, when we talk about up the middle of players, you're talking about shortstop and center field and certainly on the mound, that's where you start in regards to building an organization.
Will Kyle play anywhere else? He described in that Zoom last week, which got everyone going. He talked about taking grounders at first, talked about being an athlete, having played on the infield, having played the outfield. Do you feel comfortable putting him anywhere else besides catcher?
You know, I Salvador Perez used to take balls at shortstop. Corey Lee takes balls at second base. You know, so we like to – I mean, Kyle is a very athletic. He's capable of playing multiple positions, quite honestly, but we believe in him as a catcher. That's where we feel like he's going to impact the game the most. You know, with the way that Will and the staff utilize the roster and the versatility, you know, to give them as many weapons as possible. Obviously, you get late in games and certain things happen, and you want to, you know, put the best foot forward in regards to optimizing a certain situation. You know, it's not bad for a guy to have some level of comfort over there. But in the near term, I certainly don't expect him to be playing first base.
You've talked about it being a good problem to have multiple good catchers, but how does it affect both those guys, Kyle and Edgar, when they're not necessarily getting full-time catching playing time?
So you know, the catching position is such a demanding role. I think it's something that perhaps isn't completely understood by, you know, the casual fan or even people that have been around the game like myself, but it's very, very demanding, and it's only getting more demanding. So to have two guys that are capable and can help you in so many different ways and to keep them energized and be able to get the best out of them, having two of them is not a bad thing. I think it's still an opportunity to develop certain areas of their game. You know, you look at you know, the receiving part, the throwing part, obviously the offensive side. Sometimes if there's a certain element of someone's game that needs to be worked on, it's tough to really dial in if they're playing so often. So to get a little bit of a rest and continue to develop and work with our coaches in certain aspects, I think is a great opportunity. So we're looking at it as a positive. I think it is a real positive. So, you know, if we feel like, you know, one player isn't getting enough reps to stay sharp and continuing to progress, you make an adjustment.
What has it been like getting to know Mr. Ishbia as he's starting to segue into being big part of the White Sox, and what can you tell us about what kind of guy he is?
I've spent a little bit of time with Justin, more of a casual encounter than anything. Seems like a very knowledgeable person when it comes to the game. I know he's got a passion for baseball, and you know, he and I have some commonalities coming from the Metro Detroit area and have migrated to Chicago. So there's always something to talk about. I think that there's probably we used to root for the Tigers and now we despise the Tigers. But I can just say that about myself. I can't speak for him, but my conversations are with Jerry. They'll remain with Jerry. The day-to-day operations are as is. And I know that, the announcement yesterday caught a significant amount of attention. I think that speaks to Jerry's long-term vision and commitment to this organization. And it certainly aligns with, baseball operations and how we've approached things and been committed to, building the foundation of this organization and building from the ground up, both from an infrastructure standpoint and then the development of our players, whether it be through the minor leagues and now at the big leagues. And I think a great example is welcoming Kyle Teal here. The continued development of Miguel Vargas and Chase Meidroff and what he's done on the field. And then on the mound with our starters, Sean Burke had an excellent start and a huge start for us yesterday, considering where we are from a pitching inning standpoint in our bullpen, and he really stepped up. So, there's just, wonderful moments to see for whether it be myself or others in the organization, hopefully our fans, to see these guys grow up, beginning to grow up at the major league level. And it just goes back to, this commitment from within at the top of really having this long-term approach for the Chicago White Sox.
Jerry, as Jerry mentioned to you in the statement, it talked about monetizing the franchise. It wasn't specific, but will it impact baseball ops?
Right now, we're focused on what the work that we've been doing. I mean, regardless of an announcement like yesterday, it doesn't change my approach, our approach of building from within. And in due time, when we want to round out the roster and make additions, we'll have those conversations, and we know we'll be supported. But in the meantime, it's about continuing to acquire the best players that we can and the mechanisms you're given in this game and grow those players and build them up to be successful major league players.
You're obviously building for the long term. When the long term might include somebody else that you'll be working alongside, what is that thought like?
I'm very much focused on 2025 and supporting Will Venable and others in the organization. And I certainly don't want to get ahead of ourselves. I mean, I'm looking at the next 3 years, quite honestly, because that's the healthiest way to stay on track and stay disciplined to the plan that we have in place.
Building with Roy and is about infrastructure improvements. I guess, do you have expectations about how this announcement could affect the support of that?
The last year and a half and the conversations we've had with Jerry, and we'll continue to have those conversations on areas that need to be improved. He's been nothing short of fantastic in regards to giving us the support. I look at what we've accomplished on the international side. You look at an R&D support. You look at how we're supporting our major league club and player development. We're going to continue to talk as a group and find ways to improve. And we've been supported, and I'm confident we'll continue to be supported.
You told us at the beginning of the season that we're going to see some rookies or prospects being called up, but because we're a month until the All-Star break, did you expect these guys to be called up this soon? And if so, what does that say about where the state of this organization is?
When you call up prospects, you want it to be as organic as possible. Obviously, you pour into them, you support them, continue to grow them so they're ready to come up here. It's tough to put a timetable on it. Obviously, if you're playing at the upper levels of the minor leagues, you're closer in proximity, and it's a possibility they may force your hand. And Kyle's a really good example of that, where it's very obvious he's in a really good spot right now, and you want to capture that momentum. Chase, another example of someone that it was very obvious that he was going to be able to help us at the major league level, and there will be more additions along the way. To predict who that's going to be and when that's going to happen, you know, I think is really hard to do. I know that we're making a lot of progress with players in the minor league system, and I anticipate that they're going to be, you know, pushing on the door, knocking on the door, and we'll make a decision if it's best for him and the, for those guys in the organization.
Is Christian Wilson okay?
What's your thoughts on Luis Robert and what's going on with him right now? And he's had a few days off, but he's still not managing well at the plate.
Yeah, I mean, the days off is, you know, certainly by design. We did it earlier in the year with Miguel Vargas, and he made some material changes in his swing, and we got him rolling. You know, so we're taking a similar approach with Louis to clear his mind, you know, make some physical adjustments to give him confidence in the box. And tonight will be a night to see how those adjustments are going. This won't, you know, how he does tonight won't dictate whether we feel like we're on the right track or not, because you know, this game, it's about continual adjustments. But I know he hasn't been happy with his production. We know that there's more in there. We expect more. You know, he's been really strong defensively, which has allowed us to continue to throw him out there. We still feel good when he's in the lineup. He's still a threat. And you look at what he's doing on the base pass and creating havoc there and at the top of the major leagues with stolen bases. You know, there's different ways to bring value to this club. And, you know, once we get the offense going, which, you know, we're confident it's going to happen, we're going to feel even better about things.
Is Colson all right after getting hit by the pitch? I know he's getting x-rays on there.
Yeah, the x-rays were negative. There's some soreness in there because he got hit pretty good. So we're glad that, you know, he dodged a bullet there, so to speak. And, you know, you look at the two home runs he hit. You know, I watched those, you know, last night. And I think those are I haven't seen consecutive home runs or two home runs in a game like that in Colson Montgomery, let alone the distance in which he struck him and the swings that he took. So, you know, yesterday was a good day to pull off a win like we did at the major league level. And it looked down not too far down in Charlotte, and to see Colson two home runs. Unfortunately, he did get hit. Yet he looks to be in a good spot, and we hope to, you know, minimize the swelling that we can get back to getting him, you know, in the lineup.
Does Colson's success present to you an issue where maybe other players who are struggling, like if he's having this type of success, do you need to go to that well more often where they're working individually with Ryan Fuller?
Possibly. You know, there's so many different ways to give players, you know, the right environment to develop. You know, you know, the game can be very challenging mentally, obviously physically as well, and you know, getting them away from their day-to-day, you know, grind of a season can be helpful. You look at it, you know, players, whether you send them out at the major league level to AAA, that, you know, it's a different environment. It's a different level of competition to slow the game down and quiet their minds and build up their confidence. Obviously, in Colson's case, you know, getting him, you know, just one-on-one time with Ryan seems to have really benefited him. And because we had success like that, just like we had success with Miguel Vargas and giving him a couple days and letting him kind of, you know, reset and make some adjustments, you know, I think it's given us more confidence to find those opportunities.
I was encouraged to hear that answer that I asked of Chris Getz about Colson Montgomery and all the success he's having at AAA Charlotte right now, aside from being plunked a couple times and obviously having to miss a few games, but nothing too serious, as you heard him address there. But the reset clearly worked for Colson Montgomery, and he's you know, you heard Getz talk about the two home runs that he hit there the other night. It's interesting because you can understand why a player would benefit dramatically from individual work with the director of hitting, Ryan Fuller, and it certainly makes sense. It also is not always practical, right? You can't do that with every single player, but we've seen the White Sox make the in-season adjustment for Miguel Vargas, which I think anybody would agree has paid off more than most people probably would have thought possible in their wildest dreams. We saw them do it a little bit with Luis Robert Jr. here the last few days. And I will tell you, last night, he certainly looked like he was attacking a little bit differently. He was aggressive on a couple of swings. One thing that Will Venable harped on specifically, because he didn't want to get into all the specifics and the adjustments that they were making with Luis Robert Jr., but he said, and he definitely emphasized that they wanted him to be ready, on time, and athletic in the box. Those were Will Venable's words. And so I will tell you that I felt, from my observation yesterday, that Luis Robert Jr. was ready on time and athletic at the dish last night. And it resulted in three RBIs on a couple of soft singles. But DJ, Darren Jackson, referenced during the broadcast last night that they were the type of singles that a hitter needs to, you know, it was a push, almost a push hit to center field where Luis Robert Jr. went with the pitch and didn't get himself out swinging wildly and not making contact. And so if you can get Luis Robert back to making those type of swings when necessary, very interesting, and hopefully they can tap into that. So just some audio there from Chris Getz that we thought was interesting to share with you. We'll let you hear a little bit more from him coming up later on. Jim Callis of Baseball America and Major League Baseball Pipeline is going to join us here at 1:45. Before we do that, though, we'll get you today's lineup when we come back right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to Rate Field as we get set for game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Royals. After the White Sox took the opener last night in Kyle Teal's debut, join us at the ballpark on Wednesday, June 18th, for Pride at the Park. Show your pride as the White Sox take on the Cardinals at 7:10 p.m. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Get you the lineup here before we talk with Jim Callis of MLB Pipeline, talk about some of the White Sox young debuts that they've made so far this year. We'll talk also about Jack Caglione on the Royals side, and also maybe a little bit of what's going on, some of the prospects that are for the upcoming draft. But White Sox lineup today, it will be lefty Mike Tauchman in right field leading off. He has certainly carved out his spot there. Chase Meidroth, I think he's solidifying himself in the two-hole, playing shortstop today. Andrew Benintendi, the lefty left fielder, bats third. Miguel Vargas mans third base and cleans up tonight, or this afternoon, excuse me. Kyle Teal will DH and bat fifth, so he moves up one spot in the lineup in game number 2. Edgar Caro, the switch-hitting catcher, bats sixth. Luis Robert Jr. in center, batting seventh. Josh Rojas, your lefty second baseman, bats eighth. And Tim Elko bats ninth and plays first base. It'll be Adrian Hauser on the mound for the White Sox, and he will be opposing Michael Wacha. When we come back, we'll talk with Jim Callis of Baseball America and get you some draft information, all the latest on prospects, and all of these young players who will be graduating from prospect status soon enough because they're playing in the majors already for the White Sox. Plenty to talk about with Jim Callis coming up next right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Sox fans, enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win an exclusive City Connect package. One lucky fan will receive some of the best City Connect gear, including a jersey, sweatshirt, and more. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. I'm Jeff Meller here at Rate Field as we're getting set for Royals and White Sox game number 2 of 3 between these two. We're having a little bit of technical difficulties with our phone line, so we're going to push Jim Callis back to 2 o'clock. And instead, I'm going to bring you the rest of Chris Getz from yesterday as he met the media. Again, this is Chris Getz talking about lots of White Sox issues.
Days ago, Louie told us that he doesn't have any trade value right now the way that he's playing, which was it was fun and, you know, took some pressure off in the conversation, but I'm sure that's not factual. And how have conversations gone, you know, with other teams? Obviously, he's a tremendously talented player who continues to play hard, steal bases, take walks at a higher ratio, play great defense. So from that perspective, could he be wrong about that?
He is wrong about that. I think he's not giving himself enough credit because of what you stated and the value he can bring to a team and a lineup. Now, with that being said, he knows he can do better at the plate, and I know that that statement was him, you know, obviously focusing on his offensive game, and in which that's where we're at right now in the effort to improve that. And we hope that, you know, that starts tonight. If it doesn't, you know, you hope that it starts the following night. So, you know, we want Luis Robert to go out there and really impact the game in all facets of the game. And that's what we're focused on right now, and I know Louis is as well.
Are some of the calls maybe insulting, considering that he doesn't have the hit tool to offer at this moment?
Well, they're expressing interest. They're continually doing that. We're not actively making phone calls on the behalf of any player. Obviously, as you approach the trade deadline, that will pick up. With that being said, we haven't gone beyond them expressing interest because we really are focused on him getting comfortable at the plate and showing what this organization and the fans of not only in Chicago but in baseball what he's capable of doing because he's done it in the past.
Higgins Smith is not active yet, but I believe he's throwing. Just have you been able to see kind of some of the progress mechanically that you were looking for with the taking him outside a little bit?
Yeah, Brian Bannister has spent a fair amount of time with him, along with some of our Matt Zaleski and our pitching coaches, and it's been a tremendous opportunity to slow him down. We had him in Major League camp, and he showed well. For any player that's getting into professional baseball, especially of his pedigree and his status, they want to get to the big leagues as quickly as they can. And he was very effective in regards to swing and miss. It was just a matter of being in the zone more consistently, and a lot of it was the reason why he was outside the zone more often than he has in the past is delivery related. And we broke down some things and compared it to where he's been in the past, whether it be with us or in college, and we feel very good about where he's at. And yeah, he's continuing his throwing program, and expect him on a mound here shortly and back in games, hopefully by the end of the month.
What is it? You've seen those positive results from Colson after the trip to Arizona. What sort of consistency or how many of those results are you looking for before you start thinking about the next decision-making process with him?
It's really about getting him in a position where we feel like he can have quality at-bats up here. And there's different ways to measure that. It's how he's handling the zone, how his bat path is traveling through the zone, and much less than just results, the surface level results. Obviously, you look at how hard a player is hitting the ball. And last night was an example of putting together some effective swings. But overall, you want him to make good decisions. You do. And swing at pitches he's supposed to, and lay off pitches he shouldn't be swinging at. Obviously the major league level is much different than the minor league level, and players, when you get up here, sometimes they can get exposed quickly, and we want to minimize that. We really do, and put him in a position. But I know I can speak for his confidence level, and I know it's growing on a daily basis.
There's upwards of a million new people that are able to watch Chicago White Sox baseball as of today. How excited are you about that? And ability to show some of these young players now to that crowd?
Yeah, I think it's a great day for the organization, knowing that we can now reach more fans of the Chicago White Sox, and show them, like you said, some of the players that we have here across the diamond and on the mound, and get perhaps a greater understanding of where we're headed, and so I look forward to grabbing more fans along the way, and for them to get a greater understanding of, once again, where we're headed.
What has Andrew Vaughn been working on since sending him down to AAA, and how have you just seen him handle that whole process?
Yeah, Andrew is working harder than anyone down in Charlotte. The feedback's been really strong. We've got a plan in place in regards to some mechanical adjustments. He's had some really quality at-bats, taking his walks and driving the baseball. He's not quite where we feel like he can be. With that being said, we know that he's not too far off either. So Andrew is continuing to work hard. We have confidence that he's going to get there, and we're going to monitor that closely.
Brian Bannister recently said that Grant Taylor has some electric stuff. What more does he need to do to prove to you before we can actually see him as a weapon here for Will in the bullpen?
Yeah, I certainly can second that. Every time he pitches, I'm pretty excited to read the reports or look at video from the night prior. He's been above 100 miles an hour. He's commanding the zone. His off-speed stuff's really strong. It's very clear that hitters are uncomfortable in the box. They try to get him early. So it's either a weak contact or perhaps they'll get him on a hit once in a while. But once they get to two strikes, it gets over fairly quickly. So You know, he's still adjusting to the shorter stints. Obviously, his stuff has risen from when he was starting. It's been nothing short of explosive. You know, the rhythm of being the bullpen's obviously different than being a starter with how you're being, how often you're being used. You know, you've got, you know, one up and you've got two ups, getting multiple outs. So we want to check those boxes, make sure that he's in a good position, and we'll move forward with him.
How when you decide kind of long-term what Grant's role is? Is it just kind of evolving as you go?
It'll evolve. You know, we had to manage his innings regardless this year based on, you know, his history. You know, obviously it's a very talented arm, and you know, there's different ways to develop players. We know that although we've got him in shorter stints right now, we're certainly not closing the door on him being a starter in the future. I mean, you look at, you know, as close as an example as Garrett Crochet and in his bullpen days and then transitioning to being a starter and what that has done for Garrett's career and has done for the White Sox. So, you know, as of right now, we've got him in these shorter stints. You know, and, you know, I think the most important thing is he's healthy and he's performing very well.
Getting to know Corey Lee as much as we've had, that conversation could have gone tremendously well. How do you envision him as a part of the White Sox and, you know, moving forward? He's made a, you know, strong impression on a lot of people.
Yeah, he has made a strong impression, and those conversations are never easy. He was disappointed, as you would expect. You know, but I have the utmost confidence that he's going to go down there and perform well and work on all facets of his catching game and certainly offensively. You know, like I said earlier, the catching position is what we feel like is a strength of the organization, considering, you know, we've got three catchers at the, you know, two catchers at the major league level and a catcher like Corey at AAA. Obviously, there's only usually only two spots at the major league team, but to have, we know that things can change quickly, whether it be you know, someone gets nicked up for a little bit or someone needs a refresher and perhaps goes down to AAA and gets some playing time. But I, more than anything, we feel really good about having those three catchers at the upper minor leagues and major league level. And Corey, I know, is going to go down there and really work hard. And I know he'll be ready when he comes back.
Does Cannon's absence necessitate a full-fledged replacement of the rotation? And can you kind of get by with some, you know, some of the bulk options you have up here already?
Yeah, I mean, as we've been kind of working through the absence of Cannon, you know, we've kind of mixed and matched and covering innings and you know, you've got Vassell, who's done a tremendous job in so many different roles, and he's stretched out to three innings at this point. I think he's been on close to 60 pitches, if not 60 pitches. So, you know, he's a guy that can take a bulk of work. You know, we've got to be creative through this period until Jonathan is back. Thankfully, he should be back pretty quickly once his IL stint is finished at that 15-day mark. So, in the meantime, you know, every day is a new day, and we're going to look to put the best, you know, pitching staff together from a starter standpoint to throughout the bullpen.
Brooks Baldwin's been killing it at AAA. Is he a guy that can kick the door down a little bit like Kyle Teal has just done, or is it going to take more, you know, kind of roster, I don't know, injuries, I guess, that are going to, you know, halt him or move him up?
Yeah, he's doing really well, and certainly not surprised. You know, we've asked a lot of Brooks, whether it be bouncing around the diamond on the infield and the outfield. You know, he's been playing he's gotten the majority of his work in the outfield and matter of fact at center field. So I you know, we feel like it's a good opportunity for him to get as many reps as possible out there. You know, offensively, you know, he's performed really well. He is an aggressive hitter. You know, we've seen that. He's continued to do that. So, you know, we're focused on honing an approach that we know that's going to translate up here, you know, on a more sustainable basis. But most importantly, just get him comfortable on the defensive side, and his time will come, and he'll rejoin the team, I would imagine, in the near future.
There you go. Chris Getz yesterday joining the media ahead of Kyle Teal's debut. I will add, too, you just heard him talk about Brooks Baldwin very positively. Brooks Baldwin last night went 4-for-5, increasing his average to .373. He also has an OPS of .1177, so he is killing it down at AAA Charlotte. Wouldn't be surprised if we do see him back here in the majors at some point this season. I'm Jeff Meller as we're talking White Sox on White Sox Weekly. Let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves. Good news, we got that technical difficulties all fixed up, so we got the phone lines working. We're going to talk with Jim Callis when we come back about a lot of the minor leagues, some of the interesting debuts here at right field. Kyle Teal, obviously Jack Caglione for the Royals. Lots to talk about with Jim. We'll do that next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Jeff Meller back here at Wright Field as we're getting set for White Sox and Royals game number 2 of 3 as the White Sox are in the midst of a 7-game homestand. Be here on Friday, June 27th, to see artist Flo Rida perform at a post-game concert presented by Coca-Cola after the White Sox take on the Giants at 6:40. Don't miss your chance for an up-close on-field experience. Exclusive on-field passes are on sale now with limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/concert. My pleasure right now to be joined by, you see him on MLB Network frequently, you see his work on MLB Pipeline, he's been locked in years ago for Baseball America, he knows everything about all the future stars of baseball, it is Jim Callis. Jim, as always, thank you so much for your time here on White Sox Weekly. I appreciate it, my man. Thanks for being flexible, too. Sorry about that technical snafu a little bit earlier.
I can barely hear you at all.
Oh, no.
No,
oh, no, Jim.
You. Now you're back.
Okay, good, good, good. I was fearing that the technical difficulties were back. All right, Jim, as long as you can hear me, I want to start with Jack Caglione. We'll get to a lot of the White Sox conversation, but because he's here at Wright Field, he made his Major League debut earlier this week on Tuesday, and he went 0-for-5, but he had 4 hard-hit balls in that game. He only has 1 hit so far. What have you seen from him in the minor leagues and just in a week here so far? What do you think is the future for someone like Jack Caglione, who originally was thought to be a first baseman, who now also is roaming right field when he's not DHing for the Royals right now?
Yeah, you know, he's super interesting. I mean, he's athletic enough, I think, to play a passable right field. It's not a, you know, say Gavin Sheets situation out there for him, but he's one of the best power prospects I've ever seen in my 30 plus years of doing this. So we were talking about it on our podcast last week, and the best power prospects I've seen, the short list would be probably Bryce Harper 1, Bo Jackson 2, and then probably Caglione and Otani would be, you know, 3rd and 4th in whatever order. Like, the only concern you have about him as a hitter is he chases a lot of pitches, and I think he's going to have to tone that down a little bit. But he's so big and physical. It's, you know, he's not quite as big as Aaron Judge, but that kind of presence at the plate, and he's capable of mishitting the ball and still hitting it out of the park. So I don't think the chase is necessarily as troublesome as it would be for another guy, but I mean, I think we're looking at a guy who could just be a superstar, because I just have not seen too many guys with power like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And seeing him last night here for the first time in person, yeah, he's absolutely put together, you know, 6'5", all of 250 pounds. And I find it interesting you mentioned the best power prospects you've ever seen. You mentioned Bo Jackson, Royals great. And the interesting thing is Jack Caglione is doing something that for the first time since Bo Jackson, he's the first Royals prospect to make his Major League Baseball debut within the calendar year of being
drafted. I've lost the volume again. I can't hear you very well, Jeff.
All right, Jim. Let's put Jim on hold there. It might be a technical difficulty on our part, Jim. So maybe we'll see if we can reestablish a connection real quick. If we can't, we might have to just connect with Jim on a different day here. But I'll tell you, Jack Caglione absolutely looks like he is going to be a stud. I don't know if it's going to play out as well, but he certainly looks like somebody who can hit a baseball a country mile. He hasn't done it yet right now, but he, you know, had Kyle Teal not arrived yesterday, I would have spent a chunk of our conversation here on White Sox Weekly and in the pregame yesterday, I would have spent a little bit more time talking about Jack Caglione and just what he potentially could be. And yeah, that again, that Bo Jackson snippet is something that I find interesting. He's the first guy again since Bo Jackson to make his major league debut within the same calendar year of being drafted for the Royals. So clearly that is an interesting, you know, nuggets to say the least. And then to hear Jim Callis say, hey, he's got some of the best power I've ever seen behind maybe only Bryce Harper. And then he mentions Bo Jackson and Shohei Ohtani as the others. So there is certainly a possibility for a bright, bright future for Caglione going forward. And that is something that we'll get to see firsthand. I do think we're going to have to cut ties with Jim here for this week. We'll try and catch up with him in the not-too-distant future. I do appreciate him being flexible, but we're having some technical difficulties with our phone line, so we're going to have to just push that back to another week, which is certainly fine. We can talk about some other stuff regarding the White Sox. And, you know, Kyle Teal has slotted in nicely. He showed it yesterday. He was batting sixth, picked up his first base hit, had a couple of walks, showed some aggressiveness on the base pass. Now, he was caught at home plate on an interesting play that, you know, certainly wasn't ideal, but I think that was just a miscommunication. They're not exactly sure what happened on the base paths, but he also showed an ability throughout a runner behind the plate, and I know that Will Venable praised him for his ability behind the plate. So Kyle Teal could not have had a better debut. You add in someone like Chase Meidroth, who is batting second yet again today and has established himself as an on-base machine. He was over 400 until last night's 0-for-5. So that's something that is certainly worth thinking about when you consider Chase Meidroth was 10 for 11 at one point in the Tigers series, reaching base. That's kind of nuts. And, you know, for a rookie to be able to do that, a lot of encouraging things there. Edgar Caro has had a couple of ups and downs. He's had moments, though, showing you his ability to go the other way when needed. He looks like a real professional hitter. He's hitting 256 at this point with a 343 on base. Would like to see a little more slug from Caro. That would certainly be a good thing, but that I do believe will come with some experience for him as his career continues. Miguel Vargas, you know, think about the fact that he was the hitter of the week at one point in May, has shown the ability to maybe be a middle of the order hitter here for the White Sox, and also shows flexibility. He can play third base. He can play first base. You know, he can, I don't think they're going to do this, but he's shown an ability to play left field from time to time if needed. So, and I don't, like I say that he did that last year. I don't think that's the future, but it's nice to have a player who has some versatility when needed. But he's played a really, really good defensive third base for the Sox so far this year. He showed he can do it at first base as well. So all of a sudden, you've got four spots in the lineup with some players who are, you know, under the age of 26 here. And oh, by the way, someone like Braden Montgomery is absolutely tearing it up in high A right now for the White Sox. You've got Caleb Bonnemer, who looks like he could be a player as well in the, you know, maybe a year or two out. Also Colson Montgomery, they've done it a lot to try and fix his swing, and he's come back and showed that the adjustments he made with his work with Ryan Fuller have been good, and so that's something that is encouraging as well. I wouldn't be surprised at all. I mean, if Colson Montgomery continues to do what he's done over the last 2 weeks in his return to AAA Charlotte, he's going to force his way up to the majors at some point here. You know, maybe we're talking August. I think the White Sox are going to be a little bit cautious in their approach with him because he did have some struggles early on this year, and they were some extreme struggles, right? He was striking out about 41% of the time in AAA, and so that's why they had to, you know, send him to the Arizona Complex League with Ryan Fuller to work on that swing. And now he's immediately made those adjustments, having a lot of success. And if he can continue to do that, I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see him up at right field here in August at some point. And all of a sudden, that's 5 out of 9 spots in your lineup. And again, Montgomery, a lot of people believed he could have been in the conversation as a top 10 pick in last year's draft had he not broken his ankle. And when he did that, he certainly slid in the draft. But he's somebody who has a lot of talent. So you've got Colson Montgomery. You've got Braden Montgomery. And Braden Montgomery might be, of all the hitters the White Sox have, the young hitters in their pipeline, I think Braden Montgomery is the one who I'm most excited about with his ability to drive the ball. Now, again, he has to do it at, you know, double A, triple A, and then the major league level. But he is, his hit tool is really, really, really intriguing and maybe my favorite prospect of the White Sox, who they have. Haven't even mentioned yet, Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith. Hagen Smith was the player who the White Sox actually chose over Jack Caglione. And so that right there shows you the great deal of potential that Hagen Smith has. Now, he was dealing with a little bit of elbow discomfort, so the White Sox did shut him down, and they now have started playing catch again as he's working to get his way back. And I know White Sox director of pitching, Brian Bannister, talked recently about getting Hagen Smith back to his days last year when he was with Arkansas, when he was the college pitcher of the year, getting him back to working on those mechanics just a little bit. And they, I know they spoke with the head coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks so that they could work on some of, you know, look at the camera stuff and get his mechanics back in line where they want him to be when he was so dominant last year, and what propelled him to being picked over a power bat like Jack Caglione. So to have that waiting in Double A Birmingham, along with Noah Schultz, who is also an even higher ranked prospect in the White Sox organization, there's a lot to be excited about here. And again, a night like last night where the White Sox are able to debut Kyle Teal and have him do what he did is really exciting and really encouraging. So can't wait for it to continue to progress here on the South Side. 312-332-3776. As always, that's the phone number, although, again, I'm giving it out somewhat out of routine because we are having some technical difficulties. So I don't think we're going to be able to take your calls on White Sox Weekly before we wrap up. But as just keep the number handy just in case you ever do want to make a phone call here on White Sox Weekly. Sox fans, learn from the pros this summer at a White Sox summer camp presented by Wintrust. Starting at $165, kids ages 5 through 12 can register for a four-day baseball camp offered at over 35 locations throughout the Chicagoland area. Campers will receive a Sox swag bag with a custom sliding mitt, bag of Topps baseball cards, and more. To learn more, visit whitesox.com/play. When we come back, we'll let you hear from Kyle Teal. He spoke with the media yesterday prior to prior to yesterday's game. We'll let you hear from him about the experience of making his Major League debut, the dream coming true. We'll do all that when we come back right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. For over. Meller back here at Raitt Field. We're getting set for game number 2 of 3. Pregame coverage starts at 2:30 on the dot. First pitch coming your way at 3:10 with Adrian Hauser squaring off against Michael Wacha of the Royals. Hauser 1-1 with a 1.47 ERA. It's been really good since the White Sox signed him and added him to the rotation. Michael Wacha always pretty solid as well. He's 3-4 with a 2.88 ERA for the Royals so far this year. I mentioned Kyle Teal met the media prior to yesterday's game after arriving, got the news on Thursday that he was getting the call, and he had, very positive kid and was very excited about getting the call, lifelong dream coming true. This was our conversation, the media's conversation with Kyle Teal yesterday after batting practice prior to the game.
Take us through the last 24 hours. What's it been like for you?
It's been great. This is a dream come true, and I'm just trying to soak it all in. I can't wait for the game tonight.
Who was the first person you called?
My dad. Can't thank him enough. He's a big reason I am where I am today, not only as a baseball player, but the man I am, and he was the first person I called.
And you're in town? Who's all in town to watch you?
Yeah, I got a hefty list. I got 27 family members here coming to watch me tonight, and I'm just so excited to see them all and to watch this dream become a reality.
What's it like to see your name in the lineup
tonight? Oh, it's cool. You know, this is something I've dreamed about since I was a little kid. Everything I've worked for comes up to this point. So this is awesome.
Do you feel like you kind of, you know,
push the envelope a little bit to get yourself up here. I mean, you did everything you could down there. You talked about, you know, down the show about just doing your work every day, just focusing on that, not worry about anything else, and it got you here.
Yeah, I would just say that just working hard and being consistent with my process every single day is what I did, and I don't expect that to stop. I just keep the head down and keep working hard. I mean, I think that's a big part of my game, just being a hard-nosed ball player, so that's what I'm going to do.
When did the conversations with Davis start, as far as game planning, and just how challenging is that when you're getting called up and immediately you're thrown into the fire?
I don't think it's too challenging. I mean, I'm a professional. This is what I do, so I have all the reps I need, and I'm ready to go.
Can you take us through the emotions of just arriving to the ballpark today?
Oh, I'm just pure excitement. You know, it's hard to honestly describe it because you imagine this day, and when it comes true, you know, it feels a little different than you imagine it, but it's just really special.
Did you have the collared shirt that Sergio gave you?
Yeah. I wore it today, too.
Did you know when he called you in? Did you have a feeling, or what did you
I had no idea because we were about to play our game. I was in a pitcher's meeting. I did all my homework the night before, and I ended up catching, obviously, but I had no idea, so it was a complete surprise.
What type of game time routines do you go through?
Game time routines, I would say mainly just like right now doing batting practice, like what I'm trying to do, how I'm trying to execute, and then stuff in the weight room, stuff like that.
Kyle, you started out the year hot, cooled off a little bit, and you played really well since. Obviously, it's not the first time that's happened to you as a ball player, but what does it mean to have gone through that at AAA and kind of know that that's there now that you're here?
Yeah, I think it's good. I feel like I learned a lot. I feel like I have a better understanding of what I need to do and what I need to do to have success. Just having a better understanding for my success, and I definitely think it's a part of baseball, and I thought it helped me a lot.
Better understanding in what regards when it comes to your defense or at the plate?
Offense mainly. I feel like my defense has been really solid, and don't get me wrong, like there's been ups and downs too, but like I feel like I can take a lot offensively, like the adjustments I made. I have everything written down, so I can always go back to it. I think it's just important stuff that you learn and go through times like that.
Have they talked to you about obviously catching, but have they talked to you about other positions possibly as well, or even DH?
Well, I don't have a first base glove. I was using teammates' first base gloves when I was in Charlotte just getting ground balls, but I really don't know. I mean, I'm a catcher at the end of the day, and that's what I want to do for a long time. But obviously, in any way, I can help the team win.
You said you write everything down. Are you a journal type of guy? Or
yeah.
You take a lot of notes?
Yeah, I take a lot of notes. I'm a journal type of guy.
What's going into your journal tonight?
I'm going to do what I've always done. You know, I'm going to make every at-bat, I'll write a little note down and just go compete and have fun. Be a little kid out there.
Your timing's impeccable because I don't know if you've been tipped off, but they're expecting a pretty big crowd here tonight. I don't know if it's because of the promotion or it's because you've arrived, but are you excited about playing in front of a big crowd tonight?
Yeah, I'm pumped. This is what it's all about. You know what I mean? I can't wait for the fans to see our team play tonight, and it's going to be great.
Has Chase given you that collared shirt back, or is that his to keep?
It's his to keep, honestly. Yeah, his to keep.
Did you sleep at all this night?
I got some sleep last night. I wouldn't say I got like the best sleep, but I got sleep.
You got in yesterday? What time yesterday did you get in?
I got in around like 1:30.
Tim told us it was exciting because it was the first time he flew first class. I think that was Tim, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Tim. How was that experience for you?
Oh, it was great. First classes. They just kept feeding me waters, and I think I'm the most hydrated I've ever been right now.
I think Chase said when he came on his debut that he was here way too early. How early did you get here today?
Way too early. I was here at 11 o'clock. Everyone started rolling in around 1, so.
What was it like just walking into the clubhouse for the first time as a big leaguer?
Yeah. Again, you know, it's something I've worked my whole life for. It's really special. When you walk in the locker room, you see your nameplate on your locker. It's like, wow. Like, I did it. Like, I'm here and I'm ready to go.
Did you take any photos and send them to the family?
I'm not a big photo guy. My mom's a big photo girl, but that's her. She'll take plenty of photos tonight.
You worked with, you know, Edgar in spring and obviously a little bit Charlie. Just, you know, what's it kind of like to now take this to Atkins to the majors? You're going to be doing pitchers meetings together and just kind of acclimating the majors as catchers together.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great guy to work with. You know, he's really smart and he knows the pitching staff well. So, I mean, we talk all the time, and it's just great to be back working with him.
There you go. Kyle Teal yesterday, prior to the game, making his Major League Baseball debut. And it was a fantastic one at that. I want to say thank you to Jim Callis. We got one great answer from Jim regarding the question, but unfortunately had some technical difficulties that hopefully we'll fix and be able to catch up with Jim down the line. That's going to do it for this week's edition of White Sox Weekly, but don't worry, we've got the pregame of White Sox and Royals coming your way here in just about 3 minutes. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.